So we continue on with this transcendental series, questions by the sages. Tonight we're coming to question number 2, which is given in the first canto, first chapter, question by the sages, text number 11. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Bhurini.
Bhurini.
Bhuri.
Bhuri.
Karmani.
Karmani.
Shurupta.
Vyani.
Vibhagasha.
Vibhagasha.
Otto.
Sadho.
Sadho. Otra.
Otra.
Yat.
Yat.
Saram.
Saram.
Samudritya.
Samudritya.
Manishaya.
Manishaya.
Bruhi.
Bruhi.
Badraya.
Badraya.
Bhutanam.
Bhutanam.
Yena.
Yena.
Atma.
Atma.
Suprasidati.
Suprasidati.
Burini buri karmani.
Burini buri karmani.
Shruptavyani vibhagasha.
Shruptavyani vibhagasha.
Atasadho trayatsaram.
Atasadho trayatsaram.
Samudritya manishaya.
Samudritya manishaya.
Bruhi badraya bhutanam.
Yenatma
suprasidati.
Yenatma suprasidati.
There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction their hearts may be fully satisfied. Just as we were studying this morning, supersedity, yayatma supersedity, very similar statement, yenatma supersedity is again coming. So this morning's answer is described as being also part of the answer to this. There's a little bit of a merging there. The answer to the first question is also part of the answer to the second question. Because in this second question they're saying, what is, they say, yenatma supersedati, and in the answer to the first question, which is an overlap, Sutta Goswami is saying yayatma supersedati. So we're seeing those connections. The first question had the word pumsam. The first answer had pumsam. And the second question had supersedati. And the second answer actually begins with the second half of the text number 6, where he says supersedati again. So there's definitely we see the definite connection between the question and the answer in the case of the first and second questions and answers. So there's a rather lengthy answer, actually. Siddha Goswami is very, very inspired, obviously, by this question. What is the essence of all scriptures? Of course, it's interesting, the same exact point that was made in the previous question. What is the good for all the people in general? Again, they're saying, give us the essence of all scriptures, explain for the good of everyone. So we see the overlaps. Again, they're saying the first question is actually included in the second one, but there's more, it's expanded further. The first question is saying, what's the good for all living beings? Now they're saying, explain the essence of all scriptures for the good of all human beings. So there's some interesting overlaps going on here. So now we'll look in chapter 2, where these questions are indeed answered, beginning with a repeat of the verse we read this morning, because there is a, that is also part of the answer to question 2. Supreme occupation, Dharma, for all humanity, is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Going on to text 7, by rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. The occupational duties a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since a human being is meant for inquiry about the Absolute Truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. So in other words, it's not maya to keep yourself healthy. You know, to take sufficient rest, sufficient prasadam, sufficient warmth in the cold winter. That's not maya. Oh, you're attached to your body, Prabhu. No. But how did Prabhupada used to sign his letter? Hoping this, don't put your hand in your mouth. Okay. Prabhupada said, hoping this meets you in good health. Putting the hand in the mouth is unhealthy because there's germs. You know, very dirty. So, keeping good health, that's all right. We keep ourselves in good health, good energy, good health. But that's on the back burner. Just like when you're cooking a feast, you have the sabji on the front burner and you put the rice on the back burner, isn't it? Why? Because the rice doesn't take much attention. You just put it on there, you set it at the right level, put the lid on, that's it. Isn't it? But that sabji, or especially the pakoras, you see, you got to watch those constantly, turning them, making sure they're not underdone, they're not overdone. The pakoras require a lot of attention. The puris, oh wow, the puris, you got to make them puff up. If you, I mean, one little slight mistake and you got to, you know, just a flat nonsense. You don't have a real puri, so, you know. So, the front burner is, as this, as Siddha Goswami says, inquiry about the Absolute Truth. You see, that's where we put our energy. You know, good health, good diet, proper clothing, those things are there, but they're on the, we get them going on automatic pilot on the back burner, so we can just focus on our real work, which is to inquire about the Absolute Truth and to spread the knowledge of the Absolute Truth, the Sankirtan movement, you see. So this is a very important answer. This is, so we will go back, actually, because we're covering a lot of verses here. Actually, there's so much nectar in each verse that, I mean, we could spend a month on this topic, tonight's lecture. Easily spend a whole month of lectures just on the answer to question number 2. But, since I don't have that much time to spare, and I've been requested to cover all 6, we will dutifully give you simply a thumbnail sketch. Learned transcendentalists who know the Absolute, this is text 11. Learned transcendentalists who know the Absolute Truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that Absolute Truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. So this is an extremely important point. You do not realize the absolute truth by academic speculation, so-called academic speculation. You realize it by rendering devotional service in terms of the directions given in the scriptures. See, that's how we realize it. The scriptures give specific directions. You do like this. You see? By following those directions, then we actually realize the absolute truth and we enter into that realm which is completely beyond all miseries, all illusion. Simply you have to hear from the scriptures and those persons who are repeating what's in the scriptures, which is the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. By following their directions, then we will have our own personal realization of the absolute truth. Best among the twice-born. It is the text 13, this is. Best among the twice-born. It is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. So the duties that we have according to our position in the material society, whether it's, you know, the Varnashram system or even here in the Helsinki, you know, social system, whatever position we have, you see, that is not the end all and be all of our existence. Our real duty is to please Krishna. That's our real happiness. If what you're doing is not pleasing to Krishna, then you have to change it. That's all. If you're not pleasing Krishna by what you're doing now, you will not be satisfied. You may think you're satisfied if you're making money or you have power or prestige, but the bottom line is you'll become very frustrated. So therefore, that is actually the highest perfection, is to engage whatever you're doing, whatever your prescribed duty is. If you're a brahmachari, you use that in the service of Krishna. If you're a sannyasi, whatever your position is in the society, if you're a householder, whatever your position is, use that in the service of Krishna. And in that way, you will actually achieve the perfection of existence. Text 14, therefore, so now the actual practical means of doing that, how to please the Lord, you see. Therefore, with one pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. In Sanskrit language, it's a very nice word. Eka, we know, means one. When you put the ena end, E-N-A, ena on the end of a Sanskrit noun, then it means by that. So ekena means by the one activity. See, one-pointed, ekena, in a one way, and through a one way. This, you know, ekena, in a one, taking it as the one way, ekena. Ekena manasa. It means by or with a one-pointed mind. Ekena manasa. So, this is a very nice concept. A pointed mind, you see. It means highly targeted mind. Just like a rifle, for example. It's very pointed thing. It's very precisely pointed. You can, you know, with a high-powered rifle and a, you know, very good sight, you can, you know, a sniper can kill someone a mile away. He can precisely, you know, he can hit him here, he can hit him, I mean, he can really zero in. It's highly pointed. A high-powered rifle with a very good sniper, you know, very good sight and an expert sniper, he can pick somebody off from a great distance. So he's able to zero in his, you know, exactly to the point where he wants to hit. So in the same way, we have to take our mind, which has a tendency, you know, to jump, isn't it? Going here and there, bouncing everywhere. We have to take that mind and say, okay, you know, I have to just aim my mind and fix it on Krishna. Just, you know, one-pointed mind. Not gonna go here, it's not going to go there. I'm just going to take it and say, okay, fixed on Krishna. So we focus the mind. And just like in modern day technology, they have laser beam. A laser beam is a beam of light that is so focused, you see, that it can burn through metal. So we have to take our mind and focus it was so intensely on Krishna, with no like little quivering here and there, well, a little Maya, little sense of gratification, you know, little overindulgence of the tongue, a pretty girl, you know. And Krishna in the middle, it's kind of, you know, little Krishna in the middle of all that wavering back and forth. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So that's our downfall. That keeps us from advancing. So we have to say, okay, mind, stop, you know, going a little off the track. Now just kind of, you know, got to rein that mind in. Okay, mind, that's enough of, you know, doing this kind of a radar thing, you know, checking out all the sense gratification. Okay, mind, now come on in. Come on in, mind, and just get really tightly focused, you know, one point of attention, like a laser beam. So intensely that you can burn through the three modes of nature with your one-pointed mind. You see, you can completely burn right through the modes and get to the transcendental platform. But as long as your mind's going like this, like a windshield wiper in the car, you know, should I surrender, should I not surrender? Should I surrender, should I not surrender? Back and forth. It's called the chariot of the mind, Mano Ratha. There's Ratha Yatra, and there's Mano Ratha, the chariot of the mind, you know. Back and forth. Should I surrender? Should I not? Should I surrender? Should I not? Should I take a guru? Should I not? Should I, you know, be obedient and loyal to my authority, or should I be, you know, become a rebel and go away? You know, the mind is going back and forth, back and forth. So we say, okay, mind, stop it. You are meant to come to the point of one-pointedness, that I know no one but Krishna is my Lord, and he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. In any condition, he is my worshipful Lord. That's called a one-pointedness. And that we require if we are going to please the personality of Godhead. You see, this verse 14 is referring back to verse 13, where it's saying the ultimate goal is to please Krishna. And then it says, therefore you should, with one-pointed attention, do this, 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 this. That's how we can please Krishna. Some people have the foolish philosophy that, well, I do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. When I go to the cinema, I'm doing it to please Krishna. When I have sex with my girlfriend, I'm doing it to please Krishna, because actually everything is Krishna. And I'm pleasing her, and I'm pleasing myself. And all these bogus philosophies are out there, you see. Completely bogus philosophies. So we have to, therefore, hear from the scriptures, as we studied a few moments ago, one has to do devotional service in terms of what has been heard from the Vedanta Shruti. You cannot concoct your own pathway of devotional service. We've seen this going on. It's really shocking. Prabhupada popularized Krishna Bhakti, and now all the sahajas have come out of the woodwork. We met one woman who had gone to Vrindavan with some boyfriend she met. And they went to Radhakunda, and the Babaji told her who she was in Krishna's pastimes, which gopi she was, and what she was doing. He revealed to her eternal swarup. And then at night she was having illicit sex at Radhakund with this boy. And she thought she knew what gopi she was. Just see that, you know, there's nonsense that's going on. So therefore, we have to do devotional service in terms of what has been heard from Vedanta Shruti, as described in verse number 12. So we'll continue on here with this. And Sutta Goswami is really pouring out the mercy. How nicely he's answering the question, what is the essence of all scripture? So he continues, with sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work karma by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? Note that this is intelligent men. They take the sword of Vedic wisdom and they cut through the karma. And what is that process? Remembering Krishna. So the remembrance of Krishna is actually a sword. And it cuts away all your karma. Isn't that a nice simile? Everyone in this room has now been given a sword, you see. We've all been handed a sword by Suta Goswami. Here's your sword, you see. Now you can cut all that karma chakra that's been entangled. You can cut through all of that karma, Jai Krishna. Can cut through all of that karma and, you see, in this way you become free. So take, that's why Prabhupada said these classes are so important. These books are so important. Because anyone who studies these books is given the sword, a transcendental knowledge, transcendental remembrance of the Lord by which they can become free. Moksha yashami, what is it? Sarva papevyo moksha yashami. I deliver them from all their karma. So this process will do that. I don't care how sinful you've been. I don't care how entangled you are in karmic reactions. Whether you have good karma and that's an entanglement, or bad karma. Whatever your position is, even good karma is an entanglement. Just imagine if you open a hospital for the poor. Did the good karma of opening a charity hospital for all the poor people. So guess what? All those poor people owe you a debt. They owe you free medical care. Isn't that wonderful? 10,000 people got free medical care by your mercy. And guess what? Those 10,000 people have to give you free medical care to pay you back. So you know what that means? It means you have to come back lifetime after lifetime and get sick so they can give you free medical care. Does it sound like a great thing? All that pious activity? Now you get to give all that free medical care, birth after birth, to all those people you helped in your charity hospital. Is it? You see why we say give up all forms of karma? Because even good karma has some bad thing mixed in with it. It's great you got free medical care, but to get it you had to get sick. Sick enough to go to the hospital. So it's not, you know, being pious is not such a great deal, really. Unless you become a devotee, you're really in trouble. I mean, you really are. Whether you do, you know, impious activities or pious activities in this material world, you are in trouble. You're in big trouble, really. So therefore, you should take the sword in hand of this Vedic knowledge, what you have heard from Vedanta Shruti. Take this knowledge, cut through your karma of remembering Krishna, engaging in devotional service, and then you're fine. Then you'll get liberated from all your karma. So now we'll continue here. Oh, this is text 16. Oh, twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains an affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. So does anybody here have a problem called no taste? For chanting. No taste for serving. Some of the time, all the time. Here's a hand. You see, one honest preacher. He's not afraid. All right. Everyone, we all have the problem. Let's face it. And we all have that problem. So, here is the wonderful solution given by Suta Goswami. He's so nicely saying, oh, twice born sages. He's addressing them. He's not just speaking to them, but he's addressing them. It sounds nice. In a very personal way, saying, oh, trisporn sages. Just like I said, oh, devotees of Helsinki. You see? I'm personally addressing my dear devotees of Helsinki, ISKCON. You see? In this way, he's addressing them. Maybe I should learn from them and also do that more in my lectures. My dear devotees of ISKCON, Helsinki. You see? So he's saying, oh, twice more in sages, by serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. So you have to find out devotees who don't have any material motivation for their service, who are simply serving out of love, you see. They're not doing it for money, they're not doing it for prestige, they're not doing it for power, they're simply doing it out of love. We need to find a devotee or devotees who are simply serving out of love, and you serve them. You serve them, and by doing that, you gain an affinity for hearing the message of Vasudeva. So someone may say, well, Prabhupada's the only person we can really trust, you know. I don't know about anybody else. Well, then serve Prabhupada by serving his mission. If you can't trust anyone else of us, well, Sankarshan must have some material motive for coming here to Helsinki. I mean, couldn't be doing this out of pure love. He's got to have some material motivation. If you're thinking that way, well, all right, well, serve Prabhupada's mission. Serve Prabhupada's mission then. Distribute books, you know. Chant the holy name. Serve Prabhupada's mission. We know Prabhupada's a pure devotee. Else how could he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? He's obviously an empowered devotee. And by studying Prabhupada's books, you find that there are other devotees who, you know, you can see are very clearly very pure in their mood, and you can serve them also. And actually, we serve everyone. Our mood is to serve everyone. You see? We serve the atheists by defeating their arguments. Or by letting them stew in their own juices until their karma finally does them in so they can become purified and become devotees in the future. Actually, our mood is to serve everyone. That is our mood. But especially serving devotees who are pure in their hearts, that will enable us to quickly develop ruchi, or a taste for hearing about Krishna. So try to find devotees that are very, very pure in their mood and serve them with love, and you'll be amazed how taste comes to you. In other words, if you find devotees who have taste and you serve them, you'll inherit their quality. Instead of being envious of devotees who are more advanced than us, what we have to do is serve those devotees and appreciate those devotees who are more advanced than us, and then there, we will become the inheritors of their advanced qualities. This is one of those insider secrets. Instead of being envious of those who are more advanced, serve them with love, admire them, appreciate them, and then all those qualities they have that you're envious of them, you will find yourself possessing them also. You will inherit them automatically. So now going on to text 17. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So you see the connection between this verse and the one we just read? The previous verse was saying, by serving pure devotees, you develop taste. And now it's saying that Krishna, for those devotees who have developed taste, Krishna will cleanse out all the desire for material enjoyment from within their hearts. So there's a connection here. Serve devotees who are pure, step number one. Step number two, you will develop taste, and by you developing taste, then Krishna will make you pure also. You see? So this is a very nice sequence here, given by Sutta Goswami. And now, next verse, he says, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering a service to the pure devotee, he's again bringing up rendering service again. How important it is to serve the pure devotee. All that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service under the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So there's two services here. The Sanskrit is Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. You should always serve Bhagavatam. 24 hours a day, you must be always serving Bhagavatam. So by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam class, by distributing the Bhagavatam, and by serving the spiritual master, that person who is the person Bhagavatam, then you will actually become free. This verse actually says all that is troublesome is almost destroyed. That indicates coming to the mode of goodness. You see, in the mode of goodness, it's almost destroyed. But then after that, then loving service Krishna becomes established as an irrevocable fact. So this verse actually mentions two steps. Is everybody awake or falling asleep from a hard day's work? Try to hear. It's, as they say in Espanol, in Spanish, es muy importante. It's very important what we're saying. So try to hear. If you're a little tired, you know, kind of go like this a little bit, go like this a little bit, you know, or go like this. That works pretty good. Take your eyes and go like that. Say, okay, eyes, you're supposed to be open. You know, I don't get too heavy now, eyelids, you know. There's little techniques you can do to stay awake. Hey, it's worth it. Because you're going to sleep, have a good sleep tonight anyway, because you've worked so hard for Prabhupada all day now, you're tired, but you'll have a good sleep. You'll have, if you hear the class nicely, you'll have good dreams also. I promise good dreams. If you hear nicely the class, I guarantee. If you have a nightmare, you can come and tell me about it. But because I'm guaranteeing you'll have good dreams. Everybody will have good dreams who've tuned into the class. Okay. And so, here the first step is almost completely destroyed, and then loving service becomes irrevocable. That means you go beyond the point of almost completely destroyed to the point where all that is troublesome is totally, irrevocably smashed to smithereens. That's it. I don't know if you know that word. Smithereens means it's smashed to nothing. Something is smashed to smithereens. This means it's completely smashed to nothing. I mean, it's totally wiped out. So that will be the result of one who actually becomes very keen to hear the Bhagavatam and serve those devotees whose lives are Bhagavatam, because they're always observed in hearing, chanting, and distributing the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. They are called persons in Bhagavatam. Okay, now we go on to text 19. It's so nice how these verses tie together, because in verse 19 we came to the point of irrevocable loving service was established. Now, what is the next point? Sutta Goswami says, as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. Now this is pure goodness here. Not just, this is Shuddha Sattva, not Sattva. Because all the effects of nature's modes have become diminished. Complete happiness is there. If he was simply in the mode of sattva-gun, material goodness, he wouldn't be completely happy. You cannot be completely happy in the material mode of goodness. You can be partially happy, but you can only be completely happy when you come to pure goodness. And this is, my point is then reconfirmed by Sutta Goswami in the next verse. He says, thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness. What I said is now verified by Sutta Goswami, that he was talking about unalloyed goodness when he said goodness, confirmed by him. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. So, if your mind is dragging you down, if you're feeling like your mind is just too much, can't handle this rascal mind anymore, then simply plug into these instructions given by Sutta Goswami, and then your mind will become completely enlivened by the contact with devotional service, and you will gain positive scientific knowledge. See, scientific means it's not speculative knowledge. Scientific knowledge means factual knowledge. And how will you get that factual knowledge? You will actually see Krishna. You will see him. You will meet Krishna, just like Prabhupada told me. And now you qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So that will actually be the result for that person who becomes established in unalloyed goodness. He will directly meet God face to face. And his knowledge will be truly scientific knowledge. Because he will directly, or she, will have directly experienced God. You see? And that is described as the stage of liberation from all material associations. Now going on to text 21. Thus, the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. That's another way of saying smash to smithereens. The knot of fruitive activities is terminated when one sees the self as master. Someone may say, well, is that, which self is that talking about? The individual self or the supreme self? So Prabhupada in the purport answers that question. Attaining scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead means seeing one's own self simultaneously. So you actually realize both selves. You realize on one side your individual self is the eternal servant of Krishna. And on the other side you realize the supreme self as your eternal Lord and Master. So whether you come in from this side or this side, the end result is the same. If I realize Krishna is my eternal Lord and Master, then I understand who I am and who Krishna is. If I, on the other side, I realize that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, then I also realize who I am and who Krishna is. So either way, whether you approach to understanding who you are or you approach to understanding who Krishna is, in either case, your realization is the same. Text number 22. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. How do they render it? Sutta says, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. How sweet, how very, very sweet is this Krishna Bhakti. That you can live in a mood of great delight, susukham, at every minute of your existence. In all times, in all places, in all circumstances, you can be experiencing great delight. Next text, 23. The transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance. And just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction, he accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form and the quality of goodness. This doesn't mean that Lord Brahma and Shiva are Vishnu Tattva. But it means they have some special relationship with Krishna to act as lords of their respective modes of passion and ignorance. Text number 24. Firewood is the transformation of earth. But smoke is better than the raw wood, and fire is still better, for by fire we can derive the benefits of superior knowledge through Vedic sacrifices. Similarly, passion, rajas, is better than ignorance, tamas, but goodness is best, because by goodness one can come to realize the absolute truth. So even though goodness is not the ultimate goal, it's being emphasized here by Siddhi Goswami. Because goodness helps us. It's a very good thing. It's like we practice some of goodness here. No illicit sex, No meat eating? No intoxication? No gambling? You don't come to the transcendental platform by doing those. But you come to the mode of goodness by following those principles and bathing regularly, taking bath in the morning, putting on clean clothes. You see, living in a clean atmosphere, brahminical life, that will bring you to sattva-gun. It won't liberate you. You have to chant along with it. 16 rounds minimum. If you chant, then, because you're, some people say, well, why do I need, you know, why do I need to bathe and do all those other things? I'll just chant. No, because unless you come to the mode of goodness, you'll never be able to get to the transcendental platform. So you have to follow the regulated principles to get to the mode of goodness, and then by adding the chanting, then you're in position. It's like when we came here the other day, we came from Cologne, Germany. So to get to here, we had to first go to the airport. Actually, we took off. We didn't know there was two airports in Cologne. Our driver didn't know. He just speculated, and he was taking us to the wrong airport. It's like going to the Rajagun instead of Sattvagun. So the proper airport is the for the Vaishnava is the mode of goodness. The city has three airports, you see. There's Sattvagun, Rajagun, Tamagun. You have to get to that airport, which will take you, which has flights going to your destination. So the Cologne Bonn airport had flights to Amsterdam, which then flew on to Helsinki. The other airport didn't have the flight we needed. So if you go to the airport known as Rajagun, you can't ever go to the transcendental platform. If you go to the airport known as Tamaguna, you can never go. Don't put your hand in your mouth. That puts you in the mode of ignorance. Put your hand in your mouth. So to be in the proper position where you can actually achieve transcendence, you have to practice the items in the mode of goodness, like not putting your hand in your mouth. When you're taking vishadam, it's okay, but, you know. Then you wash your hands immediately. So we follow the items of the mode of goodness, cleanliness, and you know, following the regulated principles, you know, avoiding the illicit things. And what this does is, puts us in that state of mind where we can chant Hare Krishna and actually achieve the transcendental platform. So, that's a very important thing. Previously, all the great sages rendered service under the personality of Godhead due to his existence above the three modes of material nature. They worshipped him to become free from material conditions and thus derive the ultimate benefit. Whoever follows such great authorities is also eligible for liberation from the material world. Here we see the Guru Parampara is being emphasized. The sage Sutta is referring to so many, all the great sages, he said. Well, this is an interesting point. He's saying all the great sages rendered service under Krishna, under the personality of Godhead. So that means those who didn't render service under Krishna were not great sages. Obviously, if all the great sages rendered service under the personality of Godhead, then those that didn't render service unto him were not considered to be among the great sages. So that's a very important point being made here by Sutta Goswami. The next text, number 26, he says, those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. So there's no question of disrespect for the demigods. A devotee respects all living beings, even the ant. What to speak of the demigods who are actually devotees? They're not completely pure. That's why they've taken positions in this material world. They have material desire. But still, they're great devotees. So they are respected. But the Vaishnavas respect them. Just as we offer respect to, you know, we can offer respect to any person, seeing the Lord within his heart. We have no difficulty offering respect to the demigod. But we do not. We reject the idea of accepting them as being God or Krishna. That's all. We don't disrespect the demigod, but we don't worship them as being God. That we do not do. Only Krishna and the Vishnu Tattva forms, who are actually the Supreme God, only them we worship as the Supreme God. And of course, this is confirmed throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Kamaistai star hita jnana prapadyante nyadevata tam tam nima mashtaya prakrita niyatasvaya. That those who have lost their intelligence, they worship the demigod as the Supreme, you see. And he also states later on that other verse, he says that the men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. The worshippers of the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. My devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Chapter 7. So, Bhagavad Gita. So, there is a distinction made between the demigods and the supreme gods. This is the problem in modern day Hindu society. They don't make the distinction. And therefore, they're not able to achieve bhakti. All they do is develop some degree of piety, but that brings karma. That brings karma. To come to the platform of being free from karma, one has to worship the Supreme Personality of God in one of his multifarious manifestations, as Ram, as Krishna, as Narayan. They have to worship Vishnu Tattva as the Supreme Being. See him in a different category than the devatas, the demigod. Text number 27. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living beings, and the demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities, for they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. And now the final verse, actually there's two verses here, 28-29, to wrap it up. And Sutta, they were asking about the essence of scriptures, and now he is directly stating here, in the revealed scriptures, he's saying like that. At least the translation is like that. That's Prabhupada's understanding of the purport. Oh, Vasudeva Paraveda. Yes, there it is. That's right. That's the direct statement. By Sita Goswami in the Sanskrit language. Vasudeva Paraveda. Yes. This is a very nice verse that bears reciting. Vasudeva Paraveda, Vasudeva Paramaka, Vasudeva Parayoga, Vasudeva Parakriya, Vasudeva Param Khyanam, Vasudeva Param Tapaha, Vasudeva Paro Dharmo, Vasudeva Paragatihi. If there's any doubt as to what is the ultimate goal of this whole process being described by Sita Goswami, is pretty clear. How many times did he say Vasudev? Eight times he said Vasudev. I think he's making it pretty clear, you know, where that one point of attention is supposed to go, to Vasudeva, Krishna. Translation, in the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. The purpose performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by him only. He is supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know him. Religion, dharma, is rendering loving service unto him. He is the supreme goal of life. So in this way now, we've concluded the answer given by Sita Goswami to the second question, what is the essence of all the revealed scriptures? Especially this verse sums it all up. Vasudeva, 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 Vasudeva. So, the question is now, what will we do with this knowledge? We've been blessed tonight by hearing and discussing the answers, or the rather lengthy answer Sutta Goswami gave to the question, what is the essence? Tell us what is the essence of all the scriptures for the benefit of everyone. What does this mean for us? That's very important to understand. We have to consider with our intelligence what is the actual reality of our existence. One may try to figure it out on one's own, being proud and not wanting to accept any authority. But the difficulty is one will remain lost and bewildered in that mode of thought. It's like someone may be lost in the forest, you see. But they're very proud. I can make it. You see. And someone comes through the forest, he says, I know the way out of here. And he says, oh no, thank you. I'm going to make it on my own. I'm tough. You see, that's the materialistic mood. I don't need any help. I'm God. I'm the Supreme. I don't need any help. Intelligent person will realize, I've been wandering for days in this forest. I'm almost dead of hunger and thirst. I've gotten a little water here and there, but I'm in great difficulty in this forest. And now here comes a person who's not at all in anxiety, who's full of compassion. And this person is offering to lead me out of this forest. What do I have to lose by following him? Because I'm already lost anyway. What do I have to lose by following him? So, he says, well, I'm going to try following this person and see what the result is. And if the guide is bona fide, he actually knows the pathway. When you follow him, indeed, you actually come out of the wilderness, you come back to civilization, and your life is safe. So who is that guide? That is Sutta Goswami. We have to hear these instructions from Sutta Goswami, because that would liberate us from our position in this forest of delusion. We have these sages are so exalted that they simply wanted to hear from Sutta Goswami. They heard the whole Bhagavatam from Sutta Goswami. Whole Bhagavatam they heard. He was continuing to answer those questions, even like in the ninth canto, he was still going on to answer the questions. Actually, the whole Bhagavatam is the answer. If you really want to. Now, the whole Bhagavatam actually is the answer to the sixth question. Tathavad said, now, Sankarsana Prabhu, I want you to concentrate on the answer. You want me to cover the entire Bhagavatam? Give me a million lectures, maybe we can do it then. I don't know. You know? But in six lectures, to cover the whole, you're really saying to cover the whole. I mean, here it gives a study guide, and that's the main answers. But those answers expand out into the entire Bhagavatam. Because this is the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, questions by the sages. It expands out into the entire, 18,000 verses, actually. We're just covering the tip of the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg. But there's unlimited. Unlimited nectar in the answer to these six questions. So anyway, we've covered the tip of the iceberg. I haven't able to go very deep at all. Each verse could have been lectured on for 25 lectures easily. So I really apologize for skimming the surface, but this is an encouragement to you to now take the Bhagavatam and read each verse and discuss amongst yourself. You know, when you have a spare minute here or there, pick up a book and take one of these wonderful verses. This is the second chapter of the... Actually, it's the sweetest chapter of the entire Bhagavatam in terms of philosophy. I love this. It's called Divinity and Divine Service. This is where most of the answers are showing up. It's an incredible chapter, chapter 2. These are the most... preaching philosophy, for those of you who really want to preach and give potent classes, memorize verses out of this chapter 2 of the Bhagavatam. These are the really powerful verses, verse after verse after verse, from, you know, first canto, chapter 2. These are the great preaching verses, the greatest preaching verses, practically, in the Bhagavatam in this chapter. The answers are directly being given by the sages, by Sutta to the sages. So anyway, time is running short. We have to take rest for, so we can get it from Anglarti, but we might squeeze a few questions in here if someone has questions. Yes?
You talk about this sakan karma or karma that open a hospital, something like that.
Instead of talking about it, you are talking about sakan karma and karma.
So what was the first term?
Sakam.
Sakam.
Yeah. So, okay. We know that many temples in India, they also open this hospital, like many university temples. They run university and like that. So
yes, well,
so when
if
you
it,
donate
it,
money to that, so is it karma or what?
No, unless the temple is run by Vaishnavas and they're serving prasadam, they're giving it people the chance to hear the Hare Krishna, like our Bhaktivedanta hospital in Bombay. You can support that hospital. Because there's kirtan going on, there's the serve prasadam in the dining hall, the doctors are devotees, they preach to the patients about Krishna, that's all right. Do you give money at another hospital? Well, if you don't mind coming back to get medical care from all those patients, go ahead. You don't mind. Because you will. They owe you that medical care that you gave them. I'm telling you the truth. You will take birth again to be rewarded by all those people whose donations you help. So when you give to a devotee hospital where the whole focus is to heal the body and heal the soul at the same time, you will get great pious benefit which will help you get out of the cycle of birth and death. You choose whether you would like to get liberated or stay in karma chakra. It's your choice. Give your charity. Krishna says, yat karoshi yadasnasi yajdahosi dadasi yat tapasyasi kanteya tat kadishva madarpanam. If you want to give charity, then you give it for me. Don't give it to such and such Birla hospital. You see? He doesn't say give it to the charity hospital. He says give it to me. If you want to do a hospital, then give it to Bhaktivedanta hospital, where Krishna is the center. You come in, you've seen that Bhaktivedanta hospital, you walk into the lobby, and there's Prabhupada's deity. You see? You walk in the front door of the hospital, and there's Prabhupada, huge murti of Prabhupada. Everything is centered around Krishna there to help them, give the patients an opportunity to become healed spiritually and materially at the same time. Questions more? Yes.
You said that you should serve the pure devotees.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I understood correctly, but as I feel, the pure devotee is one who does everything for the Lord.
That's right.
So they don't need my service.
That's right. They don't.
Yeah, the
you're right. They don't.
Not pure devotees. They need my service.
Yes, that's a, there's a truth in what you said. I'll explain how what you said is true and how you can also expand your understanding. The fact is that the pure devotees don't need your service because they're totally satisfied in their service to Krishna. But the fact is that you need to serve them in order to get out of the cycle of birth and death. That's the thing.
I think that's selfish, because then I'm doing it for my liberation, it's for me, but if I want to really serve, then I should serve the poor people.
All right. I will grant you that. I will grant you that. I will grant you that point. And we will speak now in the ultimate sense. We are the emanations of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text number 8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. We exist We are emanated from Krishna. We exist for the very purpose of pleasing Him. Whether we're liberated or not doesn't even matter to the pure devotee. He's willing to stay in this material world. He doesn't care. But he understands that his duty and responsibility is to please Krishna, because Krishna is giving him everything. He's giving him his very existence. He's giving him the air, the food, the sunshine. Everything that he has is the gift of Krishna. So he understands he has an obligation to reciprocate the unlimited love that Krishna is giving him by loving him in return. So Krishna has requested that if you want to love me, then love those who love me. That's what Krishna wants. Just like there's in English, there's a proverb, if you love me, love my dog. You see? Not that you can kick your, not that you can say you love me while you kick my dog. You see what I'm saying? You have to, if you love the master, you must also love the dog. So Krishna wants that you should love these pure devotees. You should show your love for them by serving Him. Krishna wants. That will please Krishna, you see?
I think God wants us to love everyone.
Yes, that's true. He does. And He wants you to love them perfectly. You see? Not according to what you think love might be. But He wants you to love them purely and perfectly without even a slight tinge of selfishness. You understand?
That's why I feel it's difficult for me to distinguish that I would love you more and him less.
No. Krishna never says that. A devotee actually loves everyone equally.
Yeah, exactly.
No one has said that you should love someone and not love someone else. Or you should love someone more and love someone less. I never said that.
Because service is love, in a sense.
We never said that. That is your mental concoction, that we are saying that you should love some more and some less. Our philosophy is you should love everyone purely and perfectly, according to the desire of the Supreme Lord, who is the ultimate source of everything that exists and everything that you depend on. You see? He is the, when you water the root, just like when you eat, you are nourished. Do you not make sure that all the parts of your body are, well, actually, let's put it this way. For all the parts of your body to be healthy, they require nourishment. Is it not a fact? If somehow or other nourishment was cut off from one part of your body, but, you know, the nourishment comes through the blood, right? You eat, the food goes to the belly, the nutrition then is distributed through the bloodstream to all the parts of the body. Now, if the bloodstream became cut off by your hand, by a tourniquet, a tight band, your hand would be ruined eventually. If the blood was cut off long enough, you see. But so, the way to feed your hand, to give it the nutrition it needs, is not that you stick it in the bowl of soup directly, but you put the soup in your belly. And then by feeding the belly, then the nutrition goes to every part of your body. So actually, don't you love every part of your body? Isn't every part of your body important to you? If I said, well, can you spare a finger? Would you want to do that? I say, come to the kitchen, I have a knife. And we ask if you can spare a finger tonight. No, you wouldn't want to give up a finger, would you? If we asked you to give up a finger tonight, would you want to do that? Yes or no? Yes or no? If we ask you to spare a finger tonight, we want to cut off your finger, would you like that or not? Of course not. That's right. Of course you wouldn't. Because every part of your body is important, isn't it? Every part. But when you eat, do you directly feed every part of your body? You stick your finger in the soup? You stick your ear in the soup? Every part of your body requires nutrition. But when you sit down to eat, there's only one place where you put the food. You put it in through the mouth to the belly. Do you ever put your food anywhere else besides your stomach?
But that's the same thing. That we
answer my question. Do you put the food anywhere else besides your stomach?
I don't like the way you're talking like this.
No, I'm just asking you to answer my question.
Yeah, I'm asking to get to say something.
I'm asked you a question to explain. You've asked me a question, and now I'm trying to answer it for you. I'm trying to serve you and love you.
I'm also trying the same thing.
All right, so you try to serve and love me by understanding the point I'm making. I'm trying to answer your question. I'm trying to do a service for you.
Yeah.
you had a question and I'm trying to answer it. That shouldn't we love everyone? That was your question. I'm trying to answer your question. Would you kindly hear how I'm trying to serve you by answering your question? Do you want to argue with me, or do you want me to answer the question?
I just want to say one comment.
Do you want to? What about answering the question? Because you asked and I'm trying to answer.
Yeah, you can.
Can I do that first?
Yeah.
All right, let me finish.
Sure.
You've asked a question. Now I'm working very hard, even though my voice is feeling vocal strain right now.
But you don't have to.
I'm trying to do you a service because I love you and I care about you, okay? You asked, should we just love everyone equally? That was your question. So my point is that you love every part of your body also, but yet your food goes to one place, your belly. Why? Because by feeding the belly, then every part of your body becomes nourished. So in the same way, by giving your love to God, then your love goes all to all living beings. You can't directly go out and love everyone today in the world because you can't even see them. You see, can you love the people who are upstairs? You don't even know who they are. How you can love all the fish out there in the Gulf of Finland? You never met all the fish. You see, how you can show your love to every fish in the Gulf of Finland? So, to love everyone is very nice. I very much appreciate your desire to love everyone. That's very good. We applaud you for that. That's very good. But there's a practical way to actually do that. And that is called the science of bhakti, the science of perfection. Bhakti means the science of perfecting love. You see? And the trouble is, in this world, we try to love, but our love is imperfect, and therefore we're not satisfied. I love some girl, but then she goes off with someone else, you see, and I become frustrated and unhappy. You love some boy, and he goes off somewhere else, you become frustrated. Because in this world, we try to love, but again, the way we're going about it is imperfect, and therefore we have so many anxieties. Isn't it? Don't we have anxieties in this world? Have you ever been in anxiety? Or have you always been happy at every minute throughout your whole life?
Yes.
Yeah, so we experience anxiety because we want to love and we try to love, but yet things go wrong. So bhakti, what we're teaching here, is the science of how to love in such a way that everything goes right. That love is no longer, you know, there was a song I remember back in the 60s that says, don't speak of love, I've heard that word before, it's sleeping in my memory. In other words, they were so hurt by trying to love someone, now that the word love is like a four-letter word for them, they don't even want to hear that word love anymore. So the real fact is that there is actually a science of how to love perfectly. And that is given by Sutta Goswami to the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages were foreseeing an age in which love would be completely destroyed on this planet. People would forget how to really love God, how to really love each other, how to love other living beings. The sages had great mystic powers. They could see into the future. So they asked Sutta Goswami to explain what would be the ultimate program that love could be perfectly spread throughout the entire creation. They wanted to know that science of love. That's called bhakti. It's called divine love, you see. Because when you give your love, just like when you feed your belly, all the parts of your body are nourished. When you give your love to the Supreme, who is the root of everything that exists, then your love goes everywhere. So we simply want, you have a very nice sentiment to want to love everyone. We appreciate you for that. That's very nice.
I do mean divine.
Yes,
love.
I believe it.
But
so now we want to show you.
You should give your love to the one that give your love, the ones who love me, to these more kind of devotees.
But that's called self-centeredness.
Yeah, that's a bit dangerous.
You see, that's self-centeredness. If I only want to love those who love me, that means I'm really just loving myself.
That's what you were saying. That love those who love me. You said about these pure devotees. That's why you have to love those more. Kind of, you have to.
No, I never said more.
Not more.
I never said more. Sutta Goswami is simply making the point. By serving those souls who are completely pure, that is one achieves great benefit. You see. if you serve those persons who are completely pure, completely selfless, you derive great benefit by doing that. That's a fact. That's a fact. We're not denying that fact. When you serve great personalities who are completely free, who are absolutely pure in their loving mood, you see, it's a fact. You derive great benefit from doing that. We're not going to deny that. But that doesn't mean you're excluding other people. Not at all. By serving those who are completely pure in their love for all living beings and they're pure for love for God, you will also become a master of the science of purely loving all living beings. Sangat Sanjayate Kama, one develops one's consciousness according to those persons that you serve. You see, according to your association, you develop your consciousness. So if you serve persons who are very pure in their ability to love everyone, then that same quality you will develop. That doesn't mean you don't serve the others, but it means you take advantage of the opportunity whenever it's there to serve a person who is completely pure, because that way you actually inherit those qualities yourself of being able to love everyone purely without even a tinge of selfishness. In this world, our tendency is, well, if you love me, then I'll love you. But actually, in a roundabout way, I'm just loving myself. I'm willing to love you if you'll love me, you see. I'm just selfish when I think like that. Real love means you can hate me. You can spit in my face. You can even try to kill me, but I will love you. You see, that's love. When there's no thought of anything in return, that is real love. This other thing is just a business deal, you know. I'll scratch your back if you scratch my back, kind of a deal. That's not love. That's called lust. But real love means you can kill me, you can spit in my face, you can do anything you want to me, but I will love you. I don't care what you do to me. I don't care if you tell everybody in the world that I'm a rascal. You can do anything you want, but I will love you without any condition. That is real love, you see. And that's what we are teaching here, the science of unconditional love, not the so-called love of the material world. I'll scratch your back if you'll scratch mine. Now, I'm very happy now to hear any question or comment you'd like to make.
No?
Yes? Yes, please? I'm very happy to hear.
I think it's just that I have a different view on
what's so? Tell me, what is your view? What is your view? I want to tell you. Tell me. I've told you my view. I've told you Sutta Goswami's view, actually. Now I want to hear your view. I'm very eager to hear what is your view. You kindly tell me what is your view.
This that I would take an advantage whenever possible to serve somebody so that I could kind of get something. That I just don't want to do that. I'd rather go and serve the poor so nobody will see, and I think God will see. So I think we just have that different.
Let me ask you this.
But I understand completely this.
Let me ask you this. Also. Okay, I understand your point. Would you like to serve the poor perfectly or imperfectly?
I want to serve them perfectly.
All right, very good. So that was my only point. My only point was that by serving those who are perfect in their service, you will learn, you will automatically develop the qualities of yourself being perfect in your service, because you have a desire to serve the poor perfectly, which is very nice. If you serve those who already have mastered the art of serving perfectly, then you will, from them, you will learn the art yourself of how to serve everyone perfectly. That's my only point. You understand?
I think we agree.
You see? So what will be your perfect service to the poor? How will you perfect your service to the poor?
Love.
How will you relieve the poor from all anxiety? Tell me, what is your program?
Only by help of God.
Yes, very good. Only with God's grace. Because the thing is, you can feed the poor. That's very nice. But what will happen tomorrow? They'll still get hungry. And they're still going to get old, and they're still going to get sick, and they're still going to die. You may give them free medical care, but they will still get old and die, and they'll have to suffer the anxiety of death. But our program is, we will teach the poor how to not have to ever take, not how to become completely free from birth, death, old age, and disease. So we also feed the poor, but we also, at the same time, educate them of the spiritual reality beyond the suffering of this material existence. So we are the best servants of the poor. We are the best servants of the poor. You see? because we feed them, we give them clothing, we give them medical treatment, and at the same time we educate them of what is their actual identity, that this material world is not your actual home. Actually, you're an eternal resident of the spiritual world. You somehow got sidetracked here, and now we'll teach you how to get back to your original, eternal, all-blissful existence where you never get sick and you never get old and you never die and you never have to worry about poverty anymore. In the spiritual world, there is no poverty. There's not even any nasty weather in the spiritual world. There's no terrorists. There's no Al-Qaeda. There's no income tax. It's simply an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. So anyone who's telling you how to get back to that spiritual world, there you're doing the best service. Let me see. We have no objection to feeding the poor. We are known as the world's leading vegetarian food relief organization. We don't feed people meat because if they eat meat, you know what happens? They have to take birth as an animal in their next life. If you eat meat, you have to come back as an animal in your next life. Is that serving them? I gave out so many, someone's very proud. Yeah, you don't have Thanksgiving here, but it's a big holiday in America. Turkey Day, they call it. So they go to the poor on Thanksgiving. Everyone, here's your free turkey. You know, they feel so good. I gave out 500 free turkeys today. I'm feeling a great servant of the poor. I'm so great. 500 turkeys. But you know what? Those poor people that got turkeys, they have to become a turkey in their next life for eating that turkey. And the person who served them the turkeys, they will have to come back as a turkey 500 times for giving out 500 turkeys. So I really how much did I serve that poor man by giving him the free turkey? I sent him to a turkey birth in his next lifetime, and I will go join him in the turkey yard. Gobble, 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 gobble. So if you really want to serve the poor, then we have our program, Hare Krishna Food for Life. You become a donor, a regular donor to our, you have a regular monthly donation to our Hare Krishna Food for Life program. Because we distribute Krishna Prasadam food, which liberates the eater from the cycle of birth and death, at the same time to make him strong, healthy, and happy. So we are the best servants of the poor. You should help. You should give you all of your support and your time, your energy, your money, your life to help this movement. And this way, you'll be doing the best service for the poor. So I'm very happy to meet such a wonderful person as yourself who wants to serve the poor. Now, all I'm requesting is make your service to the poor perfect. That's all I'm asking. Is that all right? That's all right? Thank you very much. Are there any more questions? If not, we will stop here and we'll continue with the next question tomorrow morning at about 7:45. 7:45, we will continue with this series, and we'll continue tomorrow night as well. How we can render the best service to the poor, that was the question. How we can render the best service to the poor. What is the essence of Scripture? Actually, in this material, everyone is the poor. Even the rich are poor here, because everyone has to get sick and get old and die. So we're actually all poor in this world. The poor are poor, the middle class are poor, and the rich are also poor. So by spreading Krishna Bhakti, we're doing the greatest service for the poor. Under the direction of Sutta Goswami. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai Shankar Sampradaya ki
jai. ISKCON Helsinki devotees ki jai.